Good evening and welcome to the debate in the race for Chicago mayor. This debate is produced by ABC 7 in collaboration with the League of Women Voters of Chicago and Illinois, as well as Univision Chicago. And tonight, all nine candidates who met the requirements to appear on the ballot for this election next month are with us right here in the studio. They are community activist Jamal Green, Alderman Sophia King, State Representative Kim Buckner, businessman Willie Wilson, Cook County Commissioner Brandon Johnson, former Chicago Public Schools CEO Paul Vallis, Mayor Lori Lightfoot, Alderman Roderick Sawyer, and Congressman Jesus Chuy Garcia. Joining me to ask questions tonight are ABC 7 political reporter Craig Wall and Univision Chicago anchor Enrique Rodriguez. So here are the ground rules for tonight's 90-minute-long debate. Yes, we're going to be here for a little bit, which, by the way, all of the candidates have agreed upon. The candidates will each have 45 seconds to answer each question. The first candidate to answer each particular question for that round will get another 30 seconds for a rebuttal if they so choose. At the end of this debate, each candidate will get 1 minute for a closing statement. The order to respond to the first question was determined by ballot order. That is also how the candidates are positioned with their podiums here in our studio. So let's get right to it. The first question tonight goes to Jamal Green, and it comes from Craig Wall. Craig.
Well, crime and public safety are a top concern for many voters, and while murders and shootings have declined over the past year, they are still on the rise and up from where they were 3 years ago. Many people also still very concerned about carjackings and the random attacks that seem to happen all too often. What is your top priority to make people feel safer?
Well, thanks for the question, and thank you for hosting this, ABC. Our main concern in our administration is to make sure that we're addressing the root causes of public safety. Politicians have been continuing to do the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, and that's why we're here today. We must make sure that we are investing into neighborhoods so that we create new homeowners and thriving business corridors, that we're investing into young people where they have apprenticeships 13 to 25. We reopen up those mental health facilities. We make sure that we institute trade and tech hubs back into our school system so they have a pipeline of middle-class jobs, and police will be the support system. We must address the root causes and give folks alternative and allow them to live middle-class lives all throughout the city of Chicago.
All right, Jamal, thank you. And Sophia King, 45 seconds.
Yeah, so safety is the number one, two, and three issue that's facing our city. I represent from downtown to Hyde Park with Bronzeville in the middle, and the number one request I get is for more police presence. Now, we know that police are not the only solution. We have to get to the root causes, which is why I have a plan that does both. So I also know that we can both uplift police, we can hold them accountable, we can have safety and justice, and that's the type of leadership that I'll bring to the fifth floor.
All right, thank you. And our next candidate, same question, 45 seconds, Kim Buckner.
Listen, make no mistake about it. The murder rate in Chicago is too high, and the clearance rate is terribly too low. What you'll hear a lot tonight from a lot of my colleagues here is that the answer to this is things like drones or militarization of our police force or defunding the police. None of these are the right answer. What we have to do is make sure we invest in safety and justice and have a balanced approach. I've put forth a plan called Safer 77 that does exactly that, putting money in communities and the people who are doing the work on the ground. We need to pass the Peace Book Ordinance in the City Council. We need to pass the Anjanette Young Ordinance in the City Council and find ways to invest once again in communities and strengthen our law enforcement apparatus so they can do their job in a constitutional way.
All right, thank you. And to our next candidate here, same question, Willie Wilson, 45 seconds.
Well, I'm definitely pro-policeman, meaning taking some of the strict rules and regulation off the police officer so they can do their job. Take the handcuffs off the police, put on people who's actually doing it. Put four police officers into a car and split it up, integrate, split up the city in four segments, making sure that people get their off days. You know, police is short now, about 1,600 to 2,000 police officers. Add more of them. Take and also expand the retirement age from 63 to 65, so we can bring in more police officers to get the job done until we get back up to speed.
Okay, thank you. And now to our candidate, Brandon Johnson. Same question.
Well, this is something that we're feeling all over the city of Chicago. It's a serious problem, and it is very personal. My wife and I were raising our family on the west side of Chicago, and we've recently had to change a window from one of the bullets that have come through our home. Now, what you're going to hear on this stage is the same old talking points from 40 years ago that has failed, this so-called toughness. And do you feel any safer? That's why you have to be tough and smart. So I'm calling for what works. Full investment in youth employment. There's a direct correlation between youth employment and violence reduction, mental health care services, and making sure that we're doing everything in our power to invest in communities. Under my administration, we're going to do what works, and that's investing in people.
Okay, thank you. And to our next candidate, Paul Vallis.
Great. Look, let me answer the question. What we need to do is return to a community policing strategy that has beat cops on every beat and a community policing strategy that has Chicago police officers on the CTA platforms, on the CTA stations, and riding the trains intermittently. Last year, there were over 400 high-priority 911 calls that were not responded to, including 32,000 assaults in progress. Warrior Points, I think, reported about that. When you have that level of unresponsiveness, you have rising crime. And when you don't make arrests, you have no accountability. So at the end of the day, we've got to return to a policing strategy in which there are police officers covering the beats, police officers providing protection on the transit system.
Okay, Paul Vallis, thank you. And to Lori Lightfoot.
Well, of course, my primary goal is to make sure that Chicago is the safest big city in the country. And we've made progress year over year, ending down 14% in homicides, 20% in shootings. But I recognize that people in the city don't feel safe. So we've got to keep working on the strategy that we know is making progress, taking the guns out of the hands of criminals, holding violent, dangerous people accountable, and making sure that we hire more police. 950 were hired last year. We've hired over 200 detectives. But progress is something that we've got to keep making. We've got to make sure that we're holding ourselves accountable, and we've got to listen to the people in neighborhoods who are closest to the challenges because they're closest to the solutions. We'll make the investments that we are necessary to keep our streets safe.
Okay, thank you. And to our next candidate, Roderick Sawyer, 45 seconds.
Thank you. We must understand that this is not a both-and approach. Obviously, during safety, we want to make sure we have an effective police force. And having an effective police force, also a constitutionally compliant police force. We want to make sure that they're abiding by the reforms, they have geographic integrity, but we also have to look at what we're doing. We don't talk to children enough when we're talking about youth-related crime. I'm glad that Representative Buckner mentioned the peace book because I'm one of the prime sponsors of that, but I am not the architect of it. It's a group of young people that wrote that and made sure that if they're a part of the problem, they want to be part of the solution. We need to listen more to our youth, engage with them, and really work on that together in order to really ramp down crime. Okay. And that's part of our plan.
Thank you very much. And our next candidate, Jesus Chuy Garcia.
People all over Chicago feel unsafe. There's been a 41% increase in serious offenses. I published my plan last week at the City Club. It basically consists of ensuring that our department is fully staffed, fully funded, and modernized. There will be new leadership in the Chicago Police Department that will implement the consent decree. It's the roadmap to ensuring greater tranquility in Chicago. In addition to that, there will be comprehensive community development and investment in communities. We will invest in violence prevention. I have the history and the experience in doing that. Chicago can become safer. Building trust between community residents and the police is at the heart of ensuring that we have a safer Chicago.
Okay, time is up. Perfect. Thank you. Jamal Green, because you were the first one to go in this round, 30 seconds if you would like.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to figure out how do we continue to allow the mayor to lie about the numbers. We are not down when it comes to before her administration started. Last year, the year before last, it was a 25-year high. So, of course, we're going to have some sort of a decrease. We've had 700-plus homicides for 3 years in a row under the mayor. And she has not been connected to the neighborhoods or to what's going on the ground. And we need to stop lying about the numbers and talk about how we're going to have a new administration.
All right, Jamal Green, thank you for that. We have to move on to our next question right now for everybody. It will be answered first by Sophia King for this round. It comes from Enrique Rodriguez. Enrique.
Judy, thank you so much. The reality is that residents don't even feel safe going to work anymore. And just to give you some examples, recently we've been reporting on the alarming robberies that street vendors on Little Village have been suffering at 2 or 3 in the morning when they wake up and go to work. Just last week, we reported 4 robberies of USPS mail carriers. So this is very concerning. My question to you is, what is your plan to protect workers who have to go out on the street day in and day out to make ends meet?
Thank you for that question. I agree with Jamal that we need to talk about true numbers. So police, we need more police. They're not our sole solution to this issue, but we have a plan that puts police in the communities where they belong. Right now, they are not equitably distributed. I had an issue the other day where a group of people called 911 because they saw young men with guns, military grade, and the police did not show up. The beat cops were someone else. We need to make sure that this is a priority. We need to make sure we have equitable distribution of police and that they're in the places where we need them the most.
All right, Sophia King, thank you. Same question, 45 seconds, Cam Buckner.
Enrique, I spent time last week in Little Village talking to tamale vendors about the fact that they're scared and they don't think that the city is doing enough to give them any real protection. One gentleman told me that the police squads were rolling by a little bit more frequently, but it still was not enough. Listen, we have to find a way for CPD to coordinate with our SSAs and different organizations within our community for our street vendors, but also we change our automatic and congressional and state representative maps every 10 years. We need to go back and look at how we can change our district maps to make sure that we can be strategic and tactical so we can put resources in the right places so people can not just feel safe, but actually be safe.
All right, thank you. And Willie Wilson, your solution to this issue.
Well, I think you have to add more police officer. You must take some of these rules off the police officer and making sure they can do their job and do it the proper way. A lot of these rules take the handcuff to policemen. They're afraid to arrest somebody for fear that they're going to get arrested themselves. You know, you have to take them and work with them that way. So we got to encourage people. People got to do their job, and people cannot be scared doing their job. So I would make sure we relax some of those policies and use them common sense.
All right, thank you. Brandon Johnson, the safety of street vendors and mail carriers.
Yeah, what's disappointing about this conversation is that you have politicians and insiders that continue to use the same talking points year after year after year. We spend more on policing per capita than anywhere else in the country, and yet we're not safe.
But how will you protect?
And so here's how we protect workers, because I'm supported by workers. I am a worker. You actually have to invest in people. It's pretty straightforward. There's a direct correlation between youth employment and violence reduction. Here's what we also have to do. We have to make sure that we are providing support on the front lines with mental health care responders, because most of the calls that are coming through are mental health crises. We need to relieve the pressure off of law enforcement so they can focus on protecting those vendors. That's all what right. My plan is, and under my leadership, We'll have a better, safer Chicago.
Thank you. And 45 seconds, Paul Vallis.
Look, the bottom line is we're short police officers. We're 1,700 police officers down when the mayor took office. And we have private security, $100 million in private security, can't make arrests, $15 an hour security, policing the CTA. Are you kidding me? The bottom line is there's no substitution for having beat cops who can respond to the 911 calls. When you have 32,000 911 calls, high priority, not responded to, I'm talking about assaults and batteries in progress. That means there are not enough police resources available. So we have to fill the ranks. We have to push the police officers down to the local beats, and we have to put police officers on mass transit. That's the only way that we're going to have the resources to respond.
All right. That is your time. Thank you. And now Lori Lightfoot.
So let me answer the question directly. You ask about what we are doing with the vendors in Little Village. We've been in Little Village working with those vendors hand in glove to make sure that they are doing things that they can do to protect themselves, like not using cash, making sure that the cash that they do take in is secure. But I'll tell you the thing that we don't do. We don't protect workers. We don't protect residents by blaming the police for not showing up, for not making arrests, for not responding to calls. You've heard a lot of rhetoric here, a lot of sound bites, but not a lot of concrete solutions on how we get the job done and make our residents and our workers safe. We're doing it every single day.
I think the follow-up is, and your solution is?
I just explained it. We have been in Little Village working with those street vendors, understanding what the nature of the crime is, making sure that we're doing things in concert with them to help them make sure that their money is secure, not use money, if at all possible, using other forms of transactions to take care of themselves. But fundamentally, we don't do it by blaming the police, as you've heard over and over again.
We have to move on to our next candidate, who is waiting to respond. Same question, 45 seconds, Roderick Sawyer.
Thank you. And I do understand about long-term solutions and investments in people. I get that. But the question is, how do you protect those workers? Those workers want to be protected right now. That means we want to have a police presence. You want to have geographic integrity. That means you want officers consistently in same areas on a day-to-day basis where they get to know those vendors. They get to know the USPS person. They get familiar with them. They may even exchange numbers so that if they're in peril or they feel uncomfortable, they can reach out directly or they'll be in that area all the time. You want to have that type of integrity with our police officers, being around in beats, being around present, walking the streets, walking beats, being visible where they can see them and also be a deterrent to criminals.
Okay, thank you. And same question, 45 seconds, Chuy Garcia.
The vendors you referred to are my neighbors. They live in and around my house. I'm concerned about them. What I would do is prioritize violent crime. I would move some of the citywide units to patrolling streets in neighborhoods across Chicago. I would hire more civilians to free up uniformed personnel who would prioritize violent crime. Because in Chicago, we've had a reputation where there's an 85% chance that you can get away with murder and not be convicted, it has emboldened criminals to go out there and prey on people trying to make an honest living. These are the types of changes in my public safety plan. Read it. Go on my website.
All right. Thank you. 30-second rebuttal for Sophia King. Oh, Jamal Green. Jamal Green next. Sorry. Yes,
okay.
45
Don't
seconds
about
for
me
Jamal
down
Green.
Here. All right. You know, it is important that we listen to those vendors, and we got to be connected so that we can hear their concerns. What we're dealing with when it comes to public safety is that we haven't been dealing with this problem for many years. We've been just throwing money at police, and it's exacerbating to these levels. We need new technology. So call stations at every main street, new light poles so that it's more lit. And then we also, the best way to protect workers is to also make sure that we're creating more jobs for folks to get off of the streets. Young people should be at apprenticeships or they should be at a program throughout the day and on weekends. And we got lead pipes. We can have a massive jobs program so that we can get folks to change our lead pipes in the city of Chicago because it is environmentally hazardous. So we got to really address the problem, create more jobs, get folks off the street,
and
protect our workers.
Jamal Green, thank you. And I won't let that happen again.
All right.
30-second rebuttal now for Sophia King.
So I agree. Investing in people will not get to the immediacy of crime. We have to do that too, which is why we have a violence intervention program, which gets to hundreds of millions of dollars in violence intervention. This administration had $85 million to spend on that, and they didn't. They spent less than $5 million. But putting police in the communities where they're needed the most, we also have a plan to get 50% more police in the communities where they're needed the most, not inequitably distributed, but equitably distributed so that they can be where they need to be at the right times.
Thank you. And now Kim Buckner will be answering this next question first, and it is coming from me. Young people in Chicago have faced a lot of trauma, gun violence, a global pandemic, and learning loss because of that. Schools across the country are seeing an uptick in disruptive behaviors. Teachers report some younger students are 2 grades behind socially in school. The U.S. Surgeon General says our youth is facing unprecedented mental health challenges. So the question is, what is your plan to address youth mental health? Cam Buckner first.
Well, thank you for that question, Judy. The pandemic did not break us. It revealed to us what was already broken about us, about our systems, about our processes, and about the things that we find important. Our young people have been left behind, and we know that there is a real epidemic in this city of mental health crises going on. I believe in the treatment, not trauma model. And I also have rolled out a very comprehensive mental health plan. I'm one of the only people on this stage to have done so, that talks directly and making sure that our young people have the ability to get resources. I talk about opening up 20 clinics. I talk about making sure that four of those clinics are 24 hours, 365 days a year, so we can meet people where they are and make sure that we are giving people the proper tools that they need to deal with the issues that are addressing them.
All right, thank you. Willie Wilson, same question.
Well, I believe you have to take the young people and making sure that they'll understand they got to make a living, start by education, putting trade, teaching them business and things like that to give them something to do. And a lot of young people don't want necessarily a job. They want economic empowerment that they love to do. A lot of people won't be on the street if they had something that they love to do and they could be in their own particular business and things of that nature, you know. So I think we got to take a whole look at it. I would run it like I run my business. Chicago has got to change its outlook and run it like you run a business because Chicago okay. is a business.
All right. Thank you. Brandon Johnson, same question, youth mental health.
Yeah, well, as a public school teacher, I've seen firsthand what disinvestment looks like and the impact of traumatized communities. When Paul Vallis was in charge of public schools, he further stratified our school district, leaving our schools without the necessary support that they need. And so that's why the treatment, not trauma movement is supporting my candidacy, to make sure that we actually have frontline workers to respond to the crises. We also have to reopen our mental health clinics. Look, I've had a brother who died from untreated trauma, and he was unhoused. Under my administration, we're going to have better support for not just our young people, but for our communities as a whole to deal with the untreated trauma that unfortunately past administrations have neglected.
Okay.
I won't.
All right. Thank you. Paul Vallis, 45 seconds.
Well, Dr. Johnson continues to confuse me with other superintendents. Look, this is what we need to do. We spend $30,000 per child in the Chicago Public Schools. Only 60% of the money finds its way into the local schools, into the local classrooms. The bottom line is we've got to really significantly reduce the size of the central office, decentralize the district, push the money down to local school levels. We've got to open all of our campuses and invite community-based organizations, healthcare services, mental health services onto the campuses so that the campuses can be open through the dinner hour, on weekends, over the summer, during the holidays, so the kids are engaged. And we got to create high school work-study opportunities for these children so they can get engaged. Every city agency, department, contractor, vendor who has a contract with the city could create those jobs. Those are the things we need to do.
Okay, thank you. Youth mental health, Lori Lightfoot.
Well, look, our young people were traumatized before the pandemic, and that got exacerbated during the pandemic, which is why we increased funding for mental health across our city sevenfold. We are now serving 60,000 people a year, and when I came to office, we were serving 2,500. We are making sure for the first time ever that we're serving young people and children. We're in every single one of our 77 neighborhoods. We've increased the number of social workers in schools. We met our contractual obligations with the CTU. Mr. Vallis talks about things that we should do. I agree. We're doing them actually right now.
Okay, thank you. Same question, 45 seconds, Roderick
Sawyer.
Thank
you. I like to think that I was contributing to the fact that we're doing 7 times increase of mental health funding, because when I first became mental health chairman, I visited every mental health clinic. And what I did notice, each clinic was underutilized, it was not open long enough, and they were not serving children. When I reported back to the doctor of for public health, we talked about these things, and I believe that she would send them to the administration, and it got them noticed that we were not doing what we should be doing. We're not notifying people that we had mental health clinics. We weren't telling them all the services that we provide for free. So I like to think that this 7 times increase was part of what we were doing, part of what I was doing as chairman, getting that information out to the people that needed it and let them know that we need to invest more in these services, particularly for youth.
Okay, thank you. Same question, Chuy Garcia.
The pandemic was brutal to families and especially low-income people, especially children and students. There is a greater need for mental health services today than ever before. Concrete steps that I would take is I would hire more clinicians and partner with Cook County government, with President Preckwinkle, to utilize the network of city health clinics and county clinics, 24 and 14 respectively. In addition to that, we should explore collaborating with community health centers to increase the availability of mental health services. This is how we turn the corner on this very pressing issue and address the needs of students and children.
All right, thank you. And 45 seconds to Jamal Green.
You know, our kids deserve better. I'm really sick and tired of hearing the urgency that they're trying to say on this stage, but we have somebody here at every level of government, a congressman, state rep, commissioner, alderman, a mayor, and yet I don't see that same urgency when I'm in these neighborhoods. Our young people are suffering. They need safe spaces. They need mental health support in our schools. The ratio to counselors to students are ridiculous. We need to reopen mental health clinics that are institutions that are tackling mental health holistically, not just psychiatry, but yoga, boxing, karate, etc. I have a community center that we're trying to open up in Gresham, but our mayor is holding that back. They need safe spaces to go. They need safe spaces to grow and be better.
Okay, thank you. And candidate Sophia King.
Yeah, there are two professions that we throw everything at their feet that we are unable to solve. Teachers and police, and they're both speaking with their feet. They both need more help, especially our teachers. We need to bring professionals like clinicians into the school to help deal with the mental health insecurities that our kids have. But engagement is something that we need to do most too. There's no reason why we couldn't have after-school programs in K through 12 for our students so that they can be more engaged. We also have to bring the trades back to the schools so that children that do not choose college can have something that they can also look forward to. So I would be increasing engagement in schools as well as bringing mental health professionals back to the schools.
Thank you. And since you went first, Cam Buckner, 30 seconds.
I agree with the mayor. The young people in Chicago have been traumatized, and this administration has made it worse, and it's unfortunate. The truth of the matter is that when young people in Chicago were crying out for resources, this mayor and this administration gave them curfews. We couldn't even keep pools open in the summertime in Chicago. There is something wrong with that. As my grandfather used to say a long time ago, don't tell me you love me, show me you love me. The city has to do that to our young people.
All right, thank you. We're going to move on to our next round right here. Our next question will be answered first by Willie Wilson here, and it is coming from our Craig Wall. Craig.
Access to transportation is what we're talking about here. In some communities, residents need to take two or more buses to either get to school or jobs or the doctor's office. Others are very concerned about their own public safety when they're on the CTA. If people cannot rely on public transportation to get to the school or jobs or to see their doctor, these are significant barriers to opportunity. How would you remove these barriers so that people can reasonably get from one place to another?
Well, the first thing I would do, you have to take them, make sure you put armed security on the CTA, bus, L, whole nine yards. You got to hire more police officers and get them on board. You got to stop playing politics so much. You look, this particular administration now, she feels safe, the mayor often feels safe, and the people's afraid. If you got 91 police officers guiding her, what about the people? All right? You should look at if you really care about people's safety. You got to look at everything. You got to cut the budget the right way and make it work.
And that is your time. Thank you. And to Brandon Johnson next.
Yeah, look, it's very clear that the public transportation system here in Chicago is unsafe and unreliable. You know, my family, we rely upon the public transportation system, and we can tell you firsthand what it's like to sit and have to wait. And that has a lot to do with the fact that we have the same old tired politics that continues to leave families behind. And the truth of the matter is, if you have a transportation system that the workers don't feel safe, the riders don't feel safe, it means we have to make sure that we're providing critical investments. To be a real world-class city, you have to have a transportation system that works for everyone. I've done it as a Cook County Commissioner, collaborating with PACE and Metra. CTA refused to come to the table. As mayor of Chicago, the CTA will be at the table. We have a better transportation system under my administration.
Okay, thank you. And Paul Vallis, 45
Look, whether
seconds.
It's access, maintenance, or for that matter, cleanliness, the CTA has failed across the board and it needs new leadership. But bear in mind that the ridership right now per day is down about 500,000. Don't blame it on COVID. Blame it on crime. Blame it on the perception that the CTA is unsafe. The fare box is now 18% of the operating budget, which means when COVID is over, when the COVID money is over, they're going to be facing a catastrophic budget deficit.
Your
solution. At the end of the day, public safety on the CTA has to be a top priority. And if you simply use the $100 million that they're using for the privatized security, you could up the police force on the CTA to 500 and provide that security.
Okay, that is the time. Thank you. Lori Lightfoot.
So I have to say, Mr. Vallis clearly hasn't ridden the CTA or the bus, the rail in a very long time, because we do have uniform officers on the CTA, bus and rail, and we've increased them steadily over the course of the last year, which is why we're seeing violent crime go down. We have collaborated with the unions, bus and rail, to ask them what they need, and we've responded in kind. We've added canine patrols at the fare box, so what we know is the data shows that the problems later start with somebody jumping the fare box. The CTA absolutely must be safe, and we're working hard every single day to get it there. But we need to make sure that we are accurate in the things that we say and not just, again, spew sound bites that have no basis in facts, as you're hearing way too often on this stage.
Thank you. And now to Roderick Sawyer.
Yes, to remove the barriers of opportunity on CTA, first of all, I agree, it does have to be safe. You want to make sure that we're doing what's necessary. And part of what's necessary is, you know, canceling that contract and replacing them with sworn officers. I think we should do that and make sure people are safe. Additionally, we need to make sure that our workers are safe, our union workers that are working on the trains and rail lines every day, make sure they're supported, giving them the resources necessary to make the place clean, make all the stops and buses clean and safe. And then we have to talk about equity. Equity, we still are talking about a quarter of the city that does not have adequate rail service. We know that it's coming. We're working on that. But we want to make sure that people understand we have to give them opportunity and options for safe transportation.
Okay, thank you. Chuy Garcia.
First of all, the federal government has kept our transit systems functioning during the pandemic, even though ridership has been at an all-time low because of the pandemic. It is urgent to convene the leadership at the CTA, at the RTA, as well as PACE to figure out new strategies. The challenges are huge because it is projected that there will be huge deficits. As a member of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, I'm engaged in those conversations. We've got to figure out a new way to make buses and trains safer, cleaner, and more reliable. It is critical to the sustainability of our city.
All right, thank you. And Jamal Green, 45 seconds.
Well, let me just say, transportation is a right, right? And we have so much to do in regards to CTA. Of course, we must change the leadership. And there are a lot of neighborhoods that don't even have access, right? All Gill Gardens, all the way at the edge of our city, is without transportation in a grocery store. And now during campaign season, they're talking about, oh, we're finally going to do it after all of these years. We have to make the critical investments on CTA. I would call for a state of emergency in the first 100 days so that we could deploy social workers to get folks off of the CTA who need services that they need. And we're going to make CTA safe, clean, and fast with new innovative ideas. And we have to show our workers on the front line in CTA every day that we value them and care for them.
Okay, thank you. Sophia King.
Yeah, so in order to increase ridership, we definitely have to have safety. But in order to have a world-class transportation system in our city, we need to take a regional approach. We have to be able to collaborate in order to do that with the state, with the county, and with the city so that we can use economies of scale. I had residents in Bronzeville where the CTA was trying to shut down the 43rd Street bus on a Sunday. And we fought to make sure that they had the equity that they needed, but also so they could get to church. We need to make sure that we continue to fight for equity and transportation in everything that we do. And as mayor, I will continue to do that.
Thank you. Cam Buckner.
Listen, I rode the red line here today. I'm a regular CTA rider. And I can tell you right now, Judy, that CTA is broken and we have to find a way to fix it. Spending $30 million on security dogs like this is 1960 George Wallace's Alabama is a problem. We got to find a different way to do this. There are 30,000 cameras on the system that aren't connected. We need transit ambassadors. All of this is in my plan. We also talk about a text program so people can talk about contemporaneous issues that are going on the CTA. We need to find ways to do fare integration and bus rapid transit and all of the things that make this a world-class system and a world-class city. And under a Buckner administration, there will be no more ghost buses and no more ghost CTA presidents.
Great, thank you. Willie Wilson, 30-second rebuttal.
Well, one thing that I would do, I would take and put conductor backs on the CTA, clean it up, lower your fare, then you would see prices and things. Rider goes down, rider goes up. If you lower your prices, you can attract more people to ride the CTA. If you get them to safer, if just like if you go and you buy a Big Mac, you lower your price down 25%, more people come in.
Okay, thank you. Our next question goes to Brandon Johnson first here, and once again, Enrique Rodriguez.
We have all witnessed how Chicago has welcomed with open arms thousands of migrants from the Texas border. And we have also seen how the city continues to struggle to provide the care that they need. Now, in addition to that, some residents in Woodland express opposition to a potential shelter site. Today, we learned that the legislation assigned $20 million for this effort. However, the governor also made it clear that as of February 1st, there will not be any more funding for this. So I want to ask you, how will you get the money to continue caring for these migrants in a responsible, human way without affecting the resources that are needed for local residents?
Brandon Johnson.
Yeah, well, thank you for the question. First of all, let me just correct. Paul Vallis called me Dr. Johnson, which increased my student loans by $100,000. But let's just be clear about this, though. We are seeing a sick culture of states across this country that are using real lives as a political football. And that's why I'm committed to making sure that we are collaborating with the state, the federal government, the county government, to provide the necessary support for the families who are seeking safety here. But we also have to make sure that those who are here, who want and need those investments, that we're not pitting communities against one another. Under my administration, we can protect those who are here while also encouraging folks who want support and safety, that we can provide that for the families who are seeking support in the city of Chicago.
Paul Vallis, 45 seconds.
The first thing is to stop baiting other governors and start grandstanding. I mean, you can't basically grandstand and say we're a sanctuary city, we're inviting everybody in, and then not have a plan for dealing with people when they do come in. Our approach during the Chicago public school years that Gary Chukwu and I were basically operating the schools was to really accept children, regardless of who they were, where their background was, support their families if they needed it, extend all the services in kind of a natural way without having press conferences and without basically making them the focus. So we can comfortably integrate individuals who come back into the city. But when you're grandstanding, you're promoting, and you're going into communities and suddenly just dictating to them that you're going to provide these shelters, you know, we have to have a plan, first of all, and we have to integrate them into the services.
That's your time. And Lori Lightfoot.
I think I just heard Paul Vallis say that we should not call out racist, xenophobic practices of governors like Greg Abbott who are treating migrants like freight. Well, that may be your idea of a welcoming city. It's not my idea, and it's not the idea of people across the city who understand that we've got to stand up and live our values every single day. And that's exactly what we've been doing. And the $20 million we're going to put to use. And what the governor and the legislature said is also go after, in which we are, the money from the federal government. But fundamentally, it's inhumane to parole people into this country and not allow them the right to work. We are continuing to push the federal government to do the right thing and issue work permits so these people can take care of themselves and live independently.
Thank you. Roderick Sawyer.
Thank you. I was around at the Woodlawn opposition, and the Woodlawn residents felt that there was no engagement with them. That's really what they felt. It's not as if they wanted to not assist. Everybody, I think, in Chicago, and I think all Chicagoans want to assist those that are being misrepresented and being mistreated, rather, down in the southern states in Texas. They just felt that if they're going to be spending this type of money here for the residents that were coming from the south, they also should be doing something at least to identify and work with the local residents. It was not an either-or approach, again, and I think that could have been solved with additional conversation and collaboration, letting them know what was going to the neighborhood, how it was going to be done, and also what additional benefits that the local residents would have as well.
Thank you. Same question. Chuy Garcia.
As an immigrant, I truly am close to this topic. In Congress, I've been fighting to get those work authorizations that these asylum seekers need. I stood with Harold Washington in 1985 when Harold Washington declared Chicago the first welcoming city in the country. Very proud to have done that. People are coming here because they are hurting. Chicago has a long history of welcoming people who are fleeing violence and who need shelter and assistance. Part of the problem in Chicago has been that local communities have not been engaged, and that will always cause friction. I vow to continue working to reimburse municipalities across the country that are receiving these migrants.
Thank you. Jamal Green, 45 seconds.
Well, you know, one of the biggest things is we obviously have to tell our federal government, we need you to do your job. and help us out here on a local level. And that's one of the things that we must do. But we also must hear the concerns of residents throughout the city of Chicago who feel unheard, right? We got abandoned school buildings that's been in place for almost 10 years. They've been looking for a community center or looking for a jobs program, looking for different things for their neighborhoods. And the politicians have been mute, right? This administration and the prior administration. These folks were here promised affordable housing units when they knocked down the projects. They were promised youth programming, youth jobs. None of those things happen. So when you have politics come into play, you know, they pin communities against each other. We got to make sure that we're welcoming to everyone, and okay, that's how we're going to be under our administration.
Thank you. Sophia King.
Yep. So being a sanctuary city is not the question. It's about process. We need to be welcoming to everyone. We were one of the first wards to welcome migrants into our community, but we also opened up our ward to the homeless during COVID. So we have to look at the tension between the two. We can't only be welcoming to migrants and not be welcoming to the people who are existing here in our city already. That's where the tension lies. And I agree that collaboration is part of it. If we had had more collaboration with the fifth floor, we could have done a better job. Also, it wasn't a surprise after the third and fourth and fifth bus were here. So we should have had a good plan to make sure that we could incorporate these new people into our city.
Okay, properly. Thank you. Cam Buckner.
Julie, this is a personal issue for me. My wife, Bernadette, is a first-generation American, born to Cuban and Ecuadorian parents who came here in the 1980s for a better life. And so as we have these conversations about being a welcoming city, we can't just be a welcoming city in theory. We have to be one in practice, as I've heard from my colleagues here, both for the folks who are here and have been here and for the people who are coming. Listen, we have to ramp up our permanent supportive housing programs for these people. And we also have to look at the fact that it takes 150 days for an asylum seeker to get a work permit. The federal government is not doing enough. So Congressman Garcia, we need you and your colleagues to step up, because this is a problem that falls on the laps of Washington, D.C.
Okay, thank you. Same question, Willie Wilson, 45 seconds.
I kind of think a little different on this whole subject. We got people right here in Chicago, cannot pay rent, don't have food to eat, don't have a place to live. I got nothing against helping anyone, but you got to look at home first. I cannot let anybody in my home unless I know who they are. We are a country of laws, and we must take them and follow laws. We must help. If we're going to help, we got to make sure we got things in place that a smooth transition goes by pretty good. But the ones people who's here now and that spend millions and millions of dollars a year helping people in Chicago that's sleeping on the ground, that don't have a place to live. First come first. I'm not knocking, helping anybody, because I have a lot of people.
Thank you.
We have to do that.
Thank you. And 30 seconds for Brendan Johnson.
Yeah, well, look, we know the federal government has to step up, but we have to make sure that we have a plan here in the city of Chicago, and it has to be collaborative. You know, as an organizer, I can tell you that I know how to bring people together. I come from a family of 10. We argue all the time, but somehow we figure out the Thanksgiving menu. The problem that we have in the city of Chicago is that we do not have a robust Office of New Americans. Under my administration, we're going to have an Office of New Americans to provide the necessary support in order to have the families that are seeking asylum here protected while also protecting the families who are
here. All
right,
Brendan Johnson, thank you. We're going to move on to our next round here, and Paul Vallis will be the first to answer for this round. ABC 7 recently reported that rent in the city is up more than 10% for a one-bedroom apartment. Many viewers tell us they're seeing hikes much, much higher than that. There are ongoing struggles with gentrification, longtime residents feeling simply priced out of their homes. In Chicago, the approval of affordable housing essentially falls under the purview of aldermanic prerogative. Many times that means not in my backyard. So here's the question. What would you do as mayor to improve affordable housing? Paul Vallis.
Well, I'll tell you, the first thing I would do is cap individual property taxes. If you want to know why property taxes, why people's rents are going up, it's because their property taxes are rising. Since 2019, property taxes has grown an aggregate $847 million. Both the city and the schools combined. So when you're driving property taxes up at that significant amount, incidentally, despite $6 billion in COVID money, then that's what you're going to get. You're going to get higher rents. You're going to get gentrification. because people are going to be seeing their property taxes increase 30 or 40 or 50%. At the end of the day, it has a destructive impact. It's not only driving rents up, but it's driving people into homelessness. So at the end of the day, the first order of business is to cap individual property taxes so they're not being tax-driven out of their homes.
Thank you. Lori Lightfoot.
Well, I can tell you what we've specifically done. A $1 billion commitment to affordable housing, the largest commitment in the history of the city. We have brought already, in my term, almost 16,000 new units of affordable housing online. We have worked to address the issues of displacement from development. For example, in Woodlawn, where we put together a fund for $10 million to help long-term homeowners, and we have stabilized the rents there so long-term renters in that same neighborhood can stay. The same thing that we've done in Humboldt Park, and we've learned the lessons from the past administration that let market rates and forces drive people out of neighborhoods. We are working on these issues. We're pushing monies out from the emergency rental assistance and a number of other things that we've done, concrete, tangible things to help on affordable housing.
Thank you. Same question, Roderick Sawyer. Yes.
Thank you. One of the biggest problems that we have right now regarding affordable housing is the density bonuses that we pay out to developers for downtown. And it's not the problem with the money that's going to a good cause, but they're being forced to build properties that's adjacent to them. So they're trying to build affordable housing in the Fulton Market area, which doesn't make sense. When I have abundance of land in Englewood, and I'm sure my colleagues in East Garfield Park and Lawndale, we have lots where you can build affordably, really affordably, and use that same density bonus money to invest in our neighborhoods that are really seeing no investment whatsoever. They're abandoned, they're vacant, and we need to do better with spreading that money around to areas that really need it so that we can help individuals as it relates to affordable housing.
Thank you. Affordable housing, Chuy Garcia.
Housing is a human right. And the pandemic just exacerbated the number of unhoused people in Chicago. It is at a crisis level. Things that I would do to increase the production of housing, I would use the infrastructure dollars that will be coming to Chicago and other cities as well. I would tap into tax increment financing dollars to also assist. I would use loans and subsidized loans as well as grants to help people, especially people who need help improving their homes to be able to stay in homes that they lived in for a long, long time due to gentrification pressures. We also need to streamline the process to build more housing and not be a stumbling block for nonprofit developers, especially the West and South sides.
Thank you. Jamal Green, 45 seconds.
Yeah, affordable housing is such a huge issue. We got to do several things. One of the things is we have so many vacant properties throughout the city of Chicago. We've proposed giving a 10-year tax break to those folks who develop a property within a year that's city owned. We also want to give incentives to those single floor buildings, those box stores and those commercial buildings to build a floor above so that we can increase our affordable housing supply in record time. We also have a lot of properties that we already own that we're not converting into affordable housing units. And one of those things that we must do is we got to have a public bank in the city of Chicago. If we have a public bank, then we can invest in income-based housing development and invest in homeowners and small businesses, and all of the profit that comes back goes back to city services. That's some of the things that we must
do. Thank you. Sophia King.
Yeah, piggybacking on what he said, we already have tax incentives to help build housing in our neighborhood. They're called opportunity zones. This administration has really failed to use us, but we can build the South and the West Side through incentives with opportunity zones. We also need to make sure that our elders and our most vulnerable are able to stay in their homes. We have tax incentives for rich people. It's called landmark districts. We can use those same incentives to make sure our elders are able to stay in their home. I would redirect those resources.
Okay, thank you. Cam Buckner.
Listen, we have 65,000 people unhoused in this city. 20,000 of those are young people. CPS calls them students in temporary living situations. We have to figure this out, and I've put out a robust plan to do this. But a few things that can help immediately is, one, we have to stop tying property taxes to the National Consumer Price Index. It compares us to places like Manhattan and Honolulu, or we're Chicago. We should be going off of our own rubric. Secondly, we need to find a way to put money in programs for single-family rehabs for the Troubled Building Initiative. We need to put some more money into that space. The new Home for Chicago program, as well as the ARO ordinance, and do a real overhaul of our zoning process in Chicago as well. We have the ability to do this. We just need the will to do it.
Thank you. Willie Wilson.
Well, my situation like this here, I believe that you have to cut taxes to keep citizens here. More you raise taxes, real estate taxes, you're driving people out of this city. They're shopping outside of this city. So that's all going downhill. Unless you cut taxes, do your work real well, manage your budget, and stop giving yourself raises while the people, poor people suffer over here, then we can make this thing work. Cut taxes, you know, people stay in Chicago, business stays in Chicago, new business come to Chicago, and that would do it.
Thank you. Question on affordable housing. Brandon Johnson.
As a public school teacher, I can tell you I've looked in the eyes of those homeless students. And for too long, we've had administrations that continue to leave families behind. The fact that we have 65,000 homeless or unhoused in this city is absolutely unconscionable. That's why my proposal is very simple. We have to make sure that we're not just simply making affordable housing more accessible, but we also have to make sure that we commit to public housing and pathway to home ownership, like down payment assistance programs like my wife and I experienced in order to purchase our first home. Under my administration, we're going to have a better, safer city with full investment and access to public housing, access to affordable housing, just like I built two affordable housing units as Cook County Commissioner.
Okay.
I'm going to do that when I'm mayor of the city of Chicago.
Thank you. You went first in this round. Paul Vallis, 30 seconds.
Great. Look, there are a host of things that we can do to expand the pool of affordable housing. But the bottom line is what's driving the rents up, which was your initial question, and what's driving gentrification is uncapped rising property taxes, because even though there is a city levy cap, there's not an individual cap. So you have people all over the city experiencing draconian increases in their property taxes, and these are seniors and these are families on fixed income. So you've got to cap individual taxes.
Okay, moving on to our next round of questions here. Craig Wall will be getting this question and starting with Lori Lightfoot answering first. Craig.
While the economy is rebounding from the pandemic, as you know, companies are still leaving Chicago and many small businesses continue to struggle coming out of the pandemic. How do you make sure that Chicago keeps and attracts businesses, and what can be done without federal money still coming in anymore to help these struggling businesses?
Well, first of all, Chicago is a great destination for businesses. In the last 2 years alone, we've seen almost 300 businesses make pro-Chicago decisions, either relocating here from elsewhere, companies like Kellogg and others, national brands, or substantially expanding their footprint in Chicago. This is a great place to come because we've got great workers, we've got a very diverse economy, and people know that they've got me as a mayor who is pro-Chicago business. So we're seeing that happening every single day. What we do is we keep advertising and making sure that people know the advantages here. We have a great economy.
What about smaller, struggling businesses?
We put $100 million into making sure that small businesses would be able to stay afloat, hire employees. We've given them grants, we've given them loans, and we continue to push out money through our Chicago Recovery Plan, over $300 million that's going into businesses and neighborhoods. That's why our economy is thriving and allowing us to prepay our pensions.
And moving on to Roderick Sawyer, 45 seconds.
Yes. We keep and attract businesses by providing investments in these businesses. What we need to do, particularly in the industries of hospitality, where we get a lot of sales taxes from, when we go back to safety, we talk about people having crime anxiety. That means they're not coming out to eat. They're not going out to theaters and things like that. We want to make sure, one, they're safe. Two, we make proper investments in the hotel, restaurant, and all the hospitality industries, investments, because we get that back. We invest in hotels when they're making sure that they can have more rooms available and have workers there at the restaurants that right now too many are shuttered and closed. We want to make sure that we have double investments in safety and into those businesses that are really the backbone of our economy, the hospitality industry.
Thank you. Same question. Chuy Garcia.
Because of Chicago's violence problem and crime, many businesses are going to other cities across the South. We can stop the bleeding by making Chicago a safer city. My public safety plan gets to the heart of how we do that. During the pandemic, Congress stepped up and helped many struggling businesses make it through that difficult time. I have an ordinance, a bill pending in Congress, which has resulted in new regulations that will come out, programs that will assist disadvantaged business enterprises, minority and women businesses to thrive in this time. But addressing the safety concerns can take us to many other opportunities that can be achieved in Chicago.
Okay, thank you, Jamal Green. 45 seconds.
Well, as a small business owner and a person who around small business owners each and every day, I understand what we must do in our administration. And one of the first things that we must do is we must stop targeting business owners. We're going into businesses, inspecting them, and finding them for little stuff just to make money for the city of Chicago. And we must create more small businesses where their first business license is free in our city to show them that we appreciate them for creating opportunities. We'll invest in a citywide apprenticeship for young people to address the shortages, and we'll pay for that. And we will streamline permanent licensing and fees so that we can make sure that small businesses can open up throughout the city of Chicago in record time, and we're going to hold ourselves accountable to those measures.
Okay, Sophia King.
Yeah, listen, if we don't have safe communities and good schools, companies and people are going to continue to leave our city. We have to be intentional about small businesses, however. I represent the Michael Reese development, which is being heralded as one of the most equitable developments in the city. We've got a $25 million commitment to schools, a 20% commitment to affordable housing on site, and we were very intentional about writing down prices for small businesses. So we have to be very intentional about making sure our small businesses can stay in the city of Chicago.
Okay, same question, Cam Buckner.
Listen, we're bleeding. We're bleeding businesses. We saw it with Boeing. We're seeing it with the Bears. We're seeing it with mom and pop shops around this city. We need real leadership that can inspire people and have real conversations with business owners about why to be here. We need stability, civility, and predictability in this space. We also need safety, as we said earlier. I represent the Magnificent Mile in the General Assembly, and the mayor told the shop owners there that it was their fault that what happened to them in 2020 happened. Listen, many of us thought that this administration would raise the bar, but all we've seen is raise bridges, an attempt to raise taxes, and a raise murder rate. We have to do better.
Thank you. Willie Wilson.
Well, I am a business person. I understand business. It's about crime and taxes. Taxes run you out of the city, people as well as business, right? Crime, if you don't get a hold of that, continually to move out of this city. Taxes, real estate taxes, bridge taxes, air taxes, eat-in taxes, out taxes, red light camera taxes. It's not friendly enough. I run business. I understand. You know, this administration here don't have a clue, in my opinion, what they're doing. They lost too many businesses and too many people.
Okay, thank you. Brandon Johnson.
Well, this is the city of Chicago. What a beautiful place to be able to have a real economic driver within our small business communities. You know, we all are talking about having a safe city of Chicago. You know, in all due respect to Congressman Garcia, he did not release a public safety plan. He released Lori Lightfoot's public safety plan. As a teacher, I would call that plagiarism. As a Cook County Commissioner, we've invested dollars into workforce development to make sure that small businesses that are some of the greatest economic opportunities for communities. Investing in small businesses means investing in communities. And that's what I will do as mayor of the city of Chicago. We will have a better, thriving business community under my administration.
Okay, 45 seconds for Paul Vallis.
Look, safety, number one priority with businesses. It's impacting business property, it's impacting their workers, and it's impacting their customers. Secondly, we really haven't provided the type of COVID relief for businesses that were adversely impacted, not only by the pandemic, but also impacted because of the destruction, because of the unrest. Third, property taxes. The reassessments had a devastating impact on businesses all across the city. Many businesses saw increases, and I'm not faulting Mayor Lightfoot for that, for 50, 60, 70% increases in their assessments. You would have thought that they would have imposed some sort of a cap to allow the businesses to, in effect, transition into the higher assessment. So we've got to deal with the property tax issue.
Thank you. Lori Lightfoot, 30 seconds.
Well, I don't know what city these folks live in, but the one that I live in, international household names are coming to Chicago. Kimberly-Clark, Kellogg, Google. These are companies that could be anywhere in the world, but they're coming here and making significant investments. We are repurposing vacant storefronts to the tune of 300 different businesses all across our city. The investments that we've made in small businesses, $100 million in grant funds and also loans, a seven-county regional partnership that has addressed our economic growth.
Okay. Thank you. We are going to move on to our next round now and going back to Enrique Rodriguez with our next question. And Roderick Sawyer will be answering first. Enrique.
A few weeks ago, we had the opportunity to visit the Cook County Medical Examiner's Office. And we found out that in 2022, over 1,600 Cook County residents lost their life because of an opioid overdose. About 91% of all the total mortalities are related to fentanyl. And almost 80% of those fatalities are residents from the city of Chicago. So what is your plan to tackle this issue? Because this has a direct impact on health and public safety, and I'm sure a lot of families who've lost a loved one would love to hear your answer.
The opioid crisis is extremely serious. This is something that we need to be handling on a variety of levels. Obviously, making sure that we have access to the drugs that can reverse the effects of the opioid situation. They are readily available, but we need to have them more in the neighborhoods, particularly in areas where there's proven, heroin use and opioid use. In addition, we need to do things like we do internationally. We need to find safe spaces for them. I'm not trying to advocate for this. Please don't think that. But if people are going to use drugs, we want to make sure that they're safe, that we have resources for them, and resources not to use drugs. The Narcan that may be available, all the resources that they need, we should have them present as soon as possible, maybe even including spaces, okay. Safe spaces for that as well.
Thank you. Chuy Garcia.
Addressing issues like the opioids epidemic requires leadership, and it requires leaders to be able to be collaborative, to get together and convene other leaders to figure out strategies for addressing this. Obviously, this is a public health crisis and one that requires leadership. I would convene with leaders of Cook County, with legislative leaders in Springfield as well, to figure out the strategies that this urgent crisis requires. It's at the root of it. It includes mental health services. It includes mobilization of our public health clinics and personnel. But it requires leadership and the ability to convene and set tables that produce results and get things done.
Thank you. Same question, Jamal Green.
Well, we got to stop treating drugs like a criminal issue when it's really a public health issue and we're in a crisis. The object is to really keep folks alive. And we must do our part on a city level. So we must have safe injection sites. We must have access to clean needles. We must have access to mental health services, which is why it's so important that we reopen up our mental health clinics so that we can tackle mental health holistically. This is an important concern, and a lot of the candidates here, even Chuy Garcia, talks about collaboration of the government, but you're in Congress now. We need the support right now at the city level. Please go to Congress and get that funding.
Sophia King.
Yeah, listen. Over 50% of calls to 911 are for nonviolent issues like overdoses or mental health insecurities or homeless issues. So we need clinicians who are trained to respond in those things to respond in those things. This is why I led an effort to put a pilot effort to put responders in our community who are trained to do that. And this administration has not escalated those issues. Over 50% of calls. So we need to make sure that those type of responders are escalated and have the resources to respond to those issues.
All right. Cam Buckner.
We do have to invest more time and money and resources into harm reduction. People in our communities are crying out for help, and we have not given it to them. I led the fight in Springfield to make fentanyl test strips available without it being labeled as drug paraphernalia for folks who are going through these troubles. We also know that we need to have more counseling and clinical services for people. CDPH needs to have a substance abuse apparatus that's available. We need to coordinate with the Cook County Health System to make sure that we are wrapping our arms around these people. And listen, let's be real. Fentanyl is not produced by anybody in Austin or Englewood. It's coming from somewhere else. So we need to find a way to make sure that there's civil liability for the people who are poisoning our residents.
Same question, Willie Wilson.
Well, I think we need to go and to the hospitals locally, downtown, in your neighborhood, let people go there and get help until we open these clinics back up. They need to go there and get help free of charge so they can get back on their feet again. And when I say free of charge, it's because they don't have the money at the first get-go. So you don't have money, and they need to just walk in any clinic, any hospital, get help. City should be responsible for helping its citizen.
Brendan Johnson.
Yeah, my older brother Leon was my hero, but he had untreated trauma, and he died addicted and unhoused. That's why I proposed within the first 100 days of my administration, we're going to pass the ordinance Treatment Not Trauma that provides mental health responders on the front line to respond to the crises. It also will free up law enforcement to deal with the more severe crimes. But I'm also committed to reopening our mental health clinics. I fought the previous administration for closing them. I fought this administration for refusing to open them. In order to have a better, safer city of Chicago, we have to make sure that we're providing the mental health services that we desperately need.
Thank you. Paul Vallis.
Look, we need to rebuild our social service infrastructure in our poorest communities. And what does that mean? It means we need to have mental health, community-based and operated and run mental health services in literally every police district. And we need to open opioid and drug addiction centers in each of our police districts, too. If we're billing properly, both at the federal and state level, as well as through the private insurance companies, we can cover much of the costs. I lost a son to long-term, to the effects of long-term drug addiction. So I've had a personal, our family has a personal experience through this, and we've been personally impacted. But we've got to rebuild the social service infrastructure if we're going to address these issues, because people need to be able to access those services near their homes.
Thank you. Lori Lightfoot.
Well, I agree that we need collaboration at all levels of government. Congressman Garcia, you must have missed that when you were cutting deals with Sam Bankman-Fried, the crypto crook, Mike Madigan, the indicted speaker, and cutting red light camera deals, because we are doing that. CDPH, IDPH, and Cook County work hand in glove every single day. We've increased the amount of funding for care teams, which means teams that are alternatives to the police to go out and help those who are addicted. We've increased the funding for substance abuse addiction. We've increased the funding for fentanyl test strips and Narcan. That's what leadership is all about. We're doing it right now, today, in our city.
Thank you. Roderick Soya.
Thank you. You know, it's easy to say that you can support Treatment Not Trauma. I support Treatment Not Trauma, but I don't say it just by words or saying I'll do it sooner or later. I'm in meetings all the time with public health, with this other supporters. We meet and try to work this out. I meet with colleagues about supporting it, both in committee and the full council. When we talk about things like this, you got to put in the real work. I've put in the real work. I'm there every day fighting for this ordinance and a lot of other ordinances, but this one is very important, and I want to see it through. But in order to see it through, you got to count votes.
Thank you. And now I have the chance to ask one final question. Before we get to our lightning round, we're not quite done here. So far tonight, we have heard a lot of plans, a lot of proposals to address the city's pressing issues. But here's my question. How would you fund it without raising taxes, or do you anticipate a tax hike or perhaps new taxes in the city? We'll start with Chuy Garcia.
Congress has delivered for the country, and it's delivered for Chicago. I've helped deliver for Chicago. Over the past 3 years, we've delivered almost $2 billion to the city of Chicago that has kept the city afloat. We now will have an opportunity when we elect a new mayor to exercise leadership and to get the economic engines of the city firing on all cylinders again. The downtown business district is critical to the well-being of the rest of Chicago. O'Hare Airport, where the U.S. government is investing significant money coming out of the bill that I helped write in Congress, the Infrastructure and Jobs Act. These are key resources that will enable us to build a more equitable Chicago without raising taxes.
Thank you. Jamal Green, 45 seconds.
100%. We are not raising taxes. I mean, we have been taxed almost out of town. Most folks here want to leave our city. Our property taxes are high. We're being booted, which is why we move forward a measure to ban the boot and seizures of vehicles of unpaid tickets. We have to start to increase revenue. So we will use a single family mortgage bond to back home loans so that we can bring folks back to the city of Chicago. We will make it easier to open up a small business so that we can create thriving business corridors. And then we would also open a city-owned bank so that we can also have profit there. We are not going to continue raising taxes. We're going to keep folks in their homes with interest-free loans of folks at risk of losing them. We got to do better at keeping folks here and getting folks to live in the city of Chicago.
Jamal Green, thank you. Sophia King.
So, yeah, in order to not increase our taxes, we really have to grow our city. And in order to grow our city, it comes back to really having safe communities and good schools. In order to do that, we need to make sure that we implement some things in the schools. Like I said, make sure that we have strong after-school programs. Make sure that we bring trades back into the schools so that our kids know that they have the opportunity. We also have to give incentives to teachers and police to make sure that they don't leave quicker than we can hire them. We can give incentives to them by giving 0% mortgages for vacant lots that we have. We can make sure, you know, that they also have the resources to get vacant lots as well as home loans to
Sophia
make sure
King,
that they come
you.
Back to our city and not continue
thank you.
To leave.
45
thank you.
Seconds to Cam Buckner.
Yeah, the answer is not more taxes. It's more Chicagoans. We have to grow. And my plan puts forth some real clear parameters on how we help get the city closer to 3 million people by the next census, which is 2030. That's going to be important for our financial outlook. And listen, there are other things we got to do. We got to deal with our pension issues, right? We should really start having conversations about reamortization, about pension obligation bonds, about leveling off payments so we can make that system whole. We need to have conversations about the local government distributive fund, which is money coming from Springfield to the city that's at 6% now. It should be at 10%. I can do that on day one as mayor and make that happen. And lastly, we need to just talk about making sure that we can pay our bills, do them on time, and increase our credit rating so we can get those
thank
resources.
Thank you. Willie Wilson.
Well, cut crime, cut taxes, keep business coming in, keep business from leaving out, track new businesses, contract, making sure that the less fortunate community have opportunity at that, cut the red tape out, let people keep their homes, let the city grow, bring in international business, and we must get rid of crime and get rid of taxes. Without that, it ain't going to happen.
All right, Brandon Johnson.
Yeah, well, first of all, we have to be honest about how we got here because of the same old tire politics that continues to be dishonest about our budget. I'm going to tell you the truth. Look, as a public school teacher, I've seen what disinvestment looks like in our budgets. Closed schools, closed mental health facilities, no access to public housing. Look, I've managed and balanced multi-billion dollar budgets as a Cook County commissioner, and we didn't have to raise taxes, and we still made critical investments. Under my administration, I'm going to make this very clear, that our priorities will be investing in people. We will have a better, balanced budget under my administration.
Thank you. Paul Vallis.
Okay, so let me give you some specifics. Fill the vacancies. They're budgeted for. Why aren't we filling them? Secondly, if you fill the vacancies, you reduce overtime. We're spending five times the amount on overtime that we spent when Iowa City Budget Director back in the 1990s. We're spending $100 million in private security. We could up the CPD presence on the CTA to 500 if we use that money to hire CPD officers. Schools, 60% of money is finding its way to local schools. If we decentralize the schools and force more money down, we could keep the school campuses open through the dinner hour. We could provide work-study opportunities for kids. And then finally, TIFs, $1 billion diverted through TIFs. That money could be used for affordable housing
and
other things.
Thank you. Lori Lightfoot.
Well, you make these investments without raising taxes exactly the way that we've been doing it for the last 4 years. You look internally first and you make sure that you find efficiencies in the city budget. We've done that to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars saving taxpayers. We have grown our economy so much so that we've been able to make a $242 million prepayment to our pensions. You do that because we've got the most diverse economy that is roaring back from COVID, and you make sure that you keep your fiscal house in order. The rating agencies have validated us over and over again because we are running city government more efficiently and better than ever before.
Thank you. Roger Sawyer.
I do agree that we need a robust plan to repopulate the city. I believe that we should be working with World Business Chicago and our other partners to make sure that we have a plan to let people know that Chicago is that place. Obviously, we have to work in conjunction with making sure our safety is intact and all the other amenities that we want to have for the city be intact. But we do it by also having a responsible financial plan. I would not sit here and tell you I would guarantee that I would not ever raise taxes because, again, that's how we got here in the first place. Hey, we don't have to pay taxes. We don't have to pay pension obligations. And this is how we got where we are right now. I would make sure that we consult with proper financial management, maybe even use COFA, the department that we have in the city currently, to assist us in making responsible financial decisions.
Thank you. 30 seconds, Chuy Garcia.
Reimagining Chicago's downtown, investing in O'Hare as we have begun to do because Congress delivered the manufacturing dollars that will be coming to Chicago, the green investment in energy efficiency that will follow, as well as the other infrastructure dollars are the basis for working with business in Chicago to rebuild a more equitable Chicago and to ensure comprehensive community neighborhood development vitality over the next 4 years.
Okay, thank you. And we are now actually getting close to the end of this debate. I know it's hard to believe, but we do have time for a quick lightning round here. You will each now have only 15 seconds to answer this question, and there will be no time for rebuttal. And we will continue in ballot order, starting with Jamal Green. And here is the question. The Chicago Bears appear to be solidifying plans to move to Arlington Heights. What are you willing to do, if anything, to keep the Bears in Chicago? Jamal Green.
Well, my family are Bears fans, and they called me and said, keep the Bears here. But, you know, of course, they've already signed a deal. We would bring them to the table, but our priority would be city finances.
Okay, 15 seconds, Sophia King.
We definitely need to keep the Bears here, and they haven't signed that deal yet. So we need to keep them here. Either way, where the Bears are in Arlington or Chicago, they need state funds. It is more economically viable for them to be here so that they can make money on a daily basis, not just on game day.
There won't be state funds going to Soldier Field or to keep the Bears in Chicago. I can tell you that right now. And I fought in Springfield to protect the people of Chicago from that happening. The Bears, I would love to see them play here, and I would love to come to the table with them, but if they can't, then...
Lightning round, so we move fast. Willie Wilson.
Semper, bring another team here.
Okay, Brandon Johnson.
Listen, we have to listen and be prepared to negotiate. As I said, I come from a very large family of 10. I certainly learned how to negotiate when you're in a house with only one bathroom.
Okay, Paul Vallis.
I think the Arlington deal is too profitable. We blew it. We had an opportunity to negotiate with them. We didn't. You can't insult them and then bring them back to the negotiating table.
Lori Lightfoot.
We're not done yet. We're not letting the Bears go. We're going to fight to keep them in Soldier Field. We've got a plan that we presented. I think they're interested. We're going to keep talking.
Roderick Sawyer.
I'm a fan, but unless you can put 20,000 to 30,000 additional people in those stands, I don't think it can work.
Okay, Chuy Garcia.
It's time for the Hail Mary pass. Bears, if you're listening, let's talk. Let's talk about other locations in Chicago as well.
Okay. Well, we now turn to the final portion of tonight's debate. Time went by pretty quickly. Each candidate will get 1 minute now to provide a closing statement. Now we are going in reverse ballot order, starting with Chuy Garcia, just to my right. 1 minute.
I love Chicago. Chicago is the city that welcomed me as a 9-year-old boy with my family. It's why I became a public servant. Being in positions that people elected me to and place responsibility has enabled me to deliver and to place them first. Chicago is at a critical juncture. I want to lead this city over the next 4 years because we can reassume our position as a world-class city, but do it with an unprecedented level of equity and inclusion of all people. Bring development to areas that have never seen it. What does a new Chicago look like? A new Chicago looks like a thriving city in both downtown and in the neighborhoods. It's a city that is safe. It's a city that's seeing new housing being built, new retail areas. Chicago has been good to me. I'm very grateful. It sent me to Congress. In Congress, I have sought to deliver. Chicago, I want to lead you because it's time to put our city on the right track. Thank you for enabling me in being a public servant.
Roderick Sawyer.
I'm a Chicagoan who wants what most Chicagoans want. High-performing schools, robust business district, stable housing, and I want to feel and be safe. Now, Chicagoans, you are about to make a decision come Election Day to decide what type of leader is going to get us there. I'm that leader. I'm that leader because I understand the importance of service, service that was brought to me by my parents, my mother, Celeste, who taught me to study, to show thyself approved unto God. And my father, Mayor Eugene Sawyer, who showed me how important service is to your family, your community, and your city. I've been serving the city for 12 years, working on some of the toughest issues, including leading in public safety reform. I am not only the person that has the most current and relevant city government experience, I'm the one that has the drive and determination, the composure, and the vision to see the city go to new heights to a point where you will also say, I am a Chicagoan.
Lori Lightfoot.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm seeking your vote and your trust for four more years because we have started to change Chicago around for the better. We've been through life together in these last 4 years. You've opened up your homes, your hearts, your pain, but importantly, your hope. The hope and resilience that's gotten us through some of the toughest times that we have ever faced in the city of Chicago. The hope that's made us resilient, that's made our small businesses grow, our economies thrive. I'm running for mayor not because of me. I want to finish the job that we have started. And what we've seen is a better and safer, more equitable city. There's more work to be done, and I want to get there with you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Paul Vallis.
I hope I get your vote on Election Day.
Paul Vallis.
Great. Chicago's in a leadership crisis. Every single problem that we're experiencing, from the escalating crime to individuals leaving our school system in record numbers to the fact that we are now the highest taxed city among big cities in the country, is a product of bad decisions from the fifth floor. And they didn't begin with the current mayor, but clearly they have gotten worse. The city needs the type of leadership and the type of leader who can come in and assemble a leadership team, a management team, drawing from the diverse community, drawing on the resources, the human resources that exist within the city to get the city back on track. That is something I have always done as city budget director, as school chief. That is something I've done in other cities, and that is something that I will do when I become mayor.
All right. Brandon Johnson.
My name is Brandon Johnson, and under my administration, we're going to have a better Chicago. This is why my campaign is catching fire. There are voters and donors and volunteers all over the city of Chicago that are bringing a message of real transformation. And I've done it as an organizer, fighting for an elected representative school board. We did that together. Fighting to end school privatization. We did that together. As Cook County Commissioner, I've invested millions of dollars into violence prevention programs to keep our community safe. No matter where you live in this city, whether it's Ravenswood or Inglewood, whether it's Morgan Park or McKinley Park, or whether it's the west side or the south side of Chicago, we can have a better Chicago if we do it together. You and I have the opportunity to build a better Chicago. And I'm counting on you in February to vote for me, but I also want you to go to my website, brandonforchicago.com. And on February 28th, we're ready to move forward, Chicago, with a better, stronger, safer Chicago. Thank you.
Willie Wilson.
Well, we were running Chicago from a business perspective. Business perspective, it helped bring more business in, keep the ones here, keep families here. We would get a situation that nobody had to be worried about high taxes. We'll be tough on crime. We'll move all the restriction things from our police officer. Somebody run, chase somebody by foot or car, that police officer should be able to chase them down and hunt them down like a rabbit, okay? That's all I got to say, that this mayor here would not be in this office coming up next few months.
Cam Buckner.
Chicago, what you heard from me tonight was not a political platform. It was a love letter from a little boy to his city. And we have a chance because you have a choice. I'm a son of Chicago who's raising his son in Chicago, a Southsider and a graduate of CPS. I am your neighbor. If you're looking for concrete plans for the things that matter to you and your family, like public safety and education and the environment and transportation, then I am your candidate. And if you are fed up with the same old same and tired of the usual, then I want to be your mayor. I truly believe Chicago's brightest days are ahead of us, but first we have to get these dark days behind us. That's why tonight I'm asking for your support so we can begin the work together to fix Chicago, not just for the next election, but for the next generation. My name is Cam Buckner, and I don't want to just be mayor of Chicago. I want to be mayor for Chicago. Thank you and good night.
Sophia King.
I love this city, but we are at a pivotal point. We need a mayor that attacks this city's problems and not its people. We also need a mayor that understands how to represent the entire city and not just segregated parts of it. I represent from downtown to Hyde Park with Bronzeville in the middle. And because of this unwieldy crime, the number one request we get is for more police presence. Now, we know that police aren't the only solution. We need to get to the root causes. That's why we have a plan to do that immediately. We also have to stop these false narratives that separate us. We know that we can both uplift the police and hold them accountable, that we can build downtown and build our neighborhoods, that we can have safety and justice, that we can prepare our kids for college and for the trades. An equitable Chicago is a strong Chicago, and a strong Chicago is a safe Chicago. So punch two, February 28th.
Jamal Green.
This election is about if we're ready to participate in a movement of hope. The hope of the 20,000 homeless young people out there that still strive to be excellent. The hope of Anjanette Young, who are using her days to make sure that another woman is not humiliated like she was. The hope of the countless mothers that I've stood next to for years that have lost their kid to gun violence, trying to make sure that they can end gun violence on our streets. The hope of a young boy from the south side of Chicago who came from nothing that will go on to be the youngest mayor of a large city in this country. There is still hope. Hope in the face of carjackings. Hope in the face of struggle and violence. Hope in the face of corruption. I see the hope in your children and in mine, and Jamal Jr., Jalen, and Jaden. And we are going to bring this city together and create a future that we can all believe in together. If you remember that verse of scripture that talks about a future filled with hope, and if you share that faith with me, I want your vote on February 28th. Go to GoGreenChicago.com and join our movement of hope.
All right, Jamal Green, thank you. And truly, our thanks to each and every one of you.